and workable means seeing reality. An alternative is possible only if we get back the means of production, our bodies and our children, our houses and our land, our knowledge and our creativity, and the results of our labor. Unquote from Claudia von Verhoef. Follow up. What if they had followed up our good three and all good folk in academe? What if they had followed up not just among themselves, but beyond those halls, out into the world of we commoners, to let us know that heart, love, truth, beauty was about to supersede economic theory. Continuing, we should not be surprised, therefore, if most members of the subordinate groups have experienced little or no improvement over the last 15 years in their material welfare, notwithstanding, nay, even because of the improvement in their power position. One may wonder, however, whether this failure of a more favorable balance of power to deliver welfare might not be swinging the balance of power back in favor of dominance. Okay. I don't think we need to wonder on that one anymore. They took the technology and ran with it. They put all their eggs in that technology basket, that weapons technology basket. I apologize. Let me not interrupt again, except when I do. One may wonder, however, whether this failure of a more favorable balance of power to deliver welfare to we commoners might not be swinging the balance of power back in favor of dominant groups where it never left. My comment on that, the argument in this space is that so long as class remains unchallenged, so long as the originating concession, that first cause of our body's loss, remains unchallenged, there can be no improvement worthy of claiming our ambition, as power's ultimate aim will ever be to impose permanent conditions of enslavement, differentially expressed on all of us. There simply is no turning power away from whatever it temporarily concedes out of necessity, its totalitarian vision of a permanent global class system. Continuing, the cultural and political backlash of the late 1970s and of the 1980s against everything that 1968 stood for seems to suggest that that is indeed what is happening. While still paying lip service to third world solidarity, third world states have been engaged in widespread feuding and intense economic competition among themselves. My comments, sown by hidden power, do not doubt, and not just through the economic means of debt and the international financial institutions. Continuing, the younger generations, the women, the minorities, have all switched, albeit to different degrees, from collective to individual concerns. While class solidarity and unity of political purpose among workers are in most places at an historical low. And in the epicenters of the struggle for political democracy, the desire for more and greater freedoms is often paralyzed by fears of economic disruption. My comment, do we see how effectively the economy, silences dissent once we have been slotted into our nation boxes? Tunisia is coming to mind at this second. Continuing, there is no denying that from all these points of view, 1968 is dead and buried and cannot be revived by the thoughts and actions of the nostalgic few. Granted this, we must nonetheless distinguish carefully between the movements and ideologies of 1968 and the underlying structural transformations that preceded and outlived those movements and ideologies. These structural transformations are the outcome of secular trends of the capitalist world economy, and as such cannot be reversed by any unfavorable conjuncture that might ensue from their open manifestation. Thus, and a comment here, Let me say at the outset of this paragraph I'm about to read that I'm still pondering this thus, because it seems to imply multiple things, and I'm not sure which, if any, they mean. But let's read it first, and next week we'll probably come back to it, irregardless of whether we finish the complete chapter today or not. Thus, continuing, Adam Smith long ago pointed out the negative long-term impact of an ever-widening and deepening division of labor on the martial qualities of the peoples that are most directly involved in it. The greater specialization and mechanization of war activities themselves could counter this negative impact, but only up to a point. At the beginning of our century, Joseph Schumpeter made a similar point in support of his argument that capitalist development undermines the capabilities, as opposed to the propensities, of states to engage in imperialist wars. And then here's a quote from Joseph Schumpeter, Imperialism and Social Classes, quote, "The competitive system absorbs the full energies of most of the people at all economic levels. Constant application, attention, and concentration of energy are the conditions of survival within it, primarily in the specifically economic professions, but also in other activities organized on their model. In a purely capitalist world, what was once energy for wars becomes simply energy for labor of every kind." And that's, unquote, Joseph Schumpeter, Imperialism and Social Classes. And we are going to have to think more about what our good three and Mr. Schumpeter are saying here in terms of the reduction of the ability to engage in imperialist wars, because we are making a different argument here that that was not necessarily to power's disadvantage, whether or not it anticipated and planned for it. And we'll come back to that point, I think, in future, probably next week's show. To this, continuing with our good three, to this we need only add that the spatial unevenness of capitalist development has tended to undermine the martial qualities. And it is this, you feel me, it is this focus on the martial qualities of the people that I'm pondering here, exactly what they're getting at, whether they're talking about the erosion of the ability of the state to compel loyalty and allegiance, or whether they're talking about the erosion of the capacities of the people for true innovation and creativity. Well, we're going to have to think about this. I want to make sure we are doing full justice to this awesome work by our good three, which never got adequate attention from all the pundits out there. So to this we need only add, continuing, that the spatial unevenness of capitalist development has tended to undermine the martial qualities of peoples precisely in those states where it tended to concentrate wealth. Up to a point, core states have been able to counter the ensuing change in balance of power implicit in this tendency through an ever-increasing capital intensity of war. But at a certain point, as the experience of the U.S. in Vietnam and of the USSR in Afghanistan have shown in exemplary fashion, further increases in the capital intensity of war bring rapidly decreasing returns, particularly when it comes to policing the periphery of the world economy. And my brief comment on this, you do feel me here, that what power is engaged in at the moment, because they fear what is being called the periphery and the fact that there are some wide awake folk in the so-called periphery, that their main concern right now is locking us down here in the so-called West, because we have the means, we have those resources. And so they want us to remain indifferent.